It takes good people for the right reasons, willing to try to make this work. It does. And we see failures in that all over the world and locally all the time. In other words, this point is not about which party you're in or even what your political philosophy is. I don't necessarily care about that at the outset. You need good people for the right reasons, willing to commit themselves for the betterment of the community. If you don't, we have failures, and they abound everywhere.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Valberg Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to Rochester Business Connections. I am here with Ken Cross. Ken, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, Ben. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm excited to have you. You are the partner, a partner at Evans Fox LLP. You were a town judge for the town of Chilai for, what was it, 6 years?
Yes, just about 6 years. And though I retired, as I like to say, about a year ago.
Got it. And we have a million things to talk about because you're ultimately a great impact on the community, whether it's serving on boards to what, five or six teams you coach for your kids.
That's right.
And this is super Rochester centric. So I love to see a Rochester man. And you've ran for office before as well, right?
Right. In addition to town judge, ran two campaign cycles for that. I also ran for New York State Assembly back in 2010. So 11 years ago. It's a much different kind of race than a town race. So yeah, I have some of that. And I've volunteered to help an awful lot of other candidates through the years. So it's been some fun.
You're a man who keeps busy. So we have a lot to talk about in a short amount of time. So I want to dive right in to introduce people to what Evans Fox LLP is. What do you guys do? How do you serve your clients here in Rochester?
Sure. Thanks, Ben. Thanks for asking. I would say a medium-sized firm for Rochester and do most things. There's 12 attorneys here. I'm one of the partners here, and we broadly group ourselves within four groups. We have general litigation. Hopefully nobody needs that kind of service, but we do that. A lot of real estate, that's another group, both commercial, residential. Third group is corporate work or entity formations, buy sells of businesses, that kind of thing. And then the group that I lead is what we generally call estate planning, but it really includes three things. That's estate planning is typically basic for most folks. That's things like wills, powers of attorneys, healthcare proxies. Some people, it can be quite complex when it comes to tax planning, for instance. The second thing my group does is Medicaid planning, sometimes called asset protection planning or long-term care planning. That can be quite complex, particularly in today's environment with COVID and staffing issues at our long-term care facility partners. And then third, the final thing I do is estate administration. And that's after someone passes away. I help the families administer the affairs of the deceased loved one, whether it be through an estate or a trust. Things can be sometimes straightforward, but oftentimes also quite complex. These three things, estate planning, long-term care planning, and estate administration, is really just about all I've done for 15 years or so of practice, and that keeps me quite busy.
So estate planning, long-term care planning, and estate administration. My listeners are all across the board, so in the most layman's way possible, everybody's going to, at some point, need your service, right? How do I know that me or a member of my family might need it now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm going to be quite frank, in the limited time we have together, I try to make it fun for clients and I try to be very direct, but yeah, upbeat about it. Because honestly, to answer your question, Ben, the answer is I work in the areas of death and dying, right?
Right.
So you ask yourself, when do you know you need something? If we knew when we were going to die or have some critical illness that might lead to that, well, then you'd know you need my help. But the reality is, of course, we don't. We don't have a crystal ball. I find myself on a daily basis talking to folks about wishing we had these crystal balls. So I think a more articulate way to answer your question is most folks need estate planning. That is that first thing that I do. Not most, frankly, almost everyone that you might meet needs that and really should do that kind of basic estate planning work twice in their lifetime. Typically when they're a young adult, and then typically again, you know, I would say well into their retirement years. That's the average person. So there's obviously a lot more complexities that somebody might have illiquid or unique assets. Somebody might have an interesting or unique family tree. And, you know, so it could be quite more frequent than that, but in a minimum, really twice in your lifetime, generally young adult, generally well into retirement years. That's for estate planning. Long-term care planning, you know, it's really assuming good health. When you're roughly mid-60s, young 60s, mid-60s is when you really ought to start thinking about long-term care planning, asset protection planning. You lose opportunities as you age. So we can still do that work into our mid-80s and even, you know, even 90s, certainly. But you generally lose opportunities. And then estate administration, that becomes quite obvious after someone's passed. You know, mm-hmm. I could be one of the first calls to help with myriad issues that inevitably come up. Good question. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, and we, it's something that needs to be done, even if it's something that is tough to talk about sometimes. And let's talk about things that are a little bit more fun, because I think at the end of the day, people just want to get to know Ken.
And
yeah, you are a town judge for Chilai. One question I had is, do you need to go to school to become a judge? To my understanding, how did you gain that role?
Right. Ben, interestingly enough, you do not. And at first, well, let's be precise. You do not need to have a law degree, mm-hmm. to be precise, or be a practicing lawyer to run for a town or village justice in the state of New York. And at first glance, really, that just doesn't sound right. I mean, let me give a little background. You know, in a town of like Chilai, most of our folks from Rochester will know that that's a medium-sized town, just over 30,000 people in the town. It's not small, not certainly the size of a Greece, for instance. But we would face, there's two judges typically in every town. We'd face hundreds of new cases every week that could be significant felonies, at least through the very early stage of that criminal proceeding, all the way down to your DWIs and larcenies, a lot of domestic, what we call domestic cases, you know, domestic abuse kinds of cases, drug cases, and of course your local traffic. Everybody thinks of the town judge for speeding tickets, right? These are complex issues. Don't you need a law degree? You would think you do, except for how many towns and villages are there in the state? And so very many of them are rural, for instance, without all that much population. And mm-hmm. we ought not restrict the ability of a town or a village, for that matter, to have local people hearing local issues. And so on balance, I actually think our system's right. Mm-hmm. Becomes pretty complicated, though, when the towns get big and you get bigger to cities and you have more people and more complex issues. But no, you don't need to be, don't need to have a law degree. Now, that's not true for your county courts, your state Supreme Courts, your surrogates courts, family courts, et cetera. So that's the education requirement.
When and or why did you decide you wanted to serve?
Sure. I served just under 6 years, first having been appointed and then reelected twice. And it really all came from, I was new to the Rochester area, at the risk of going on too long of a story. I'll try to make this short. I was new to the Rochester area, having moved here to follow my now wife. Turned out to be a wonderful decision. In the year 2005, I'm from Buffalo originally and didn't know many folks here. And so wanted to give back, wanted to be involved in public service, and wanted to see, you know, who around my community should I get involved in. So I started volunteering in politics. And trying to help folks serve the community. And one thing leads to another. And many years later, I get this opportunity because I think ultimately, Ben, a town judge and understanding the law from the position not of an advocate. That's what an attorney is ultimately. We're advocates, right? Mm-hmm. A judge must be, of course, impartial. Honestly, not an advocate in any sense. And I really wanted that challenge. particularly also a challenge in wholly new areas of law. I mean, if you remember what I said I do at the beginning of this presentation, that has nothing to do with what happens in a town court. Town court's right. All about, you know, minor civil matters, dog bite cases, small claims, you know, vehicle and traffic. So I wanted the challenge. I wanted to get some good perspective of not being an advocate. And I wanted to serve the community. And it really complemented my private practice well. So that's kind of how it all evolved.
Yeah, I mean, you seem like a man of the community through and through. There's multiple ways we can take this, but I want to ask a couple more questions just sure. on being a judge. Assuming that some of it's public information, or let me know if you can't talk about it, but I'm curious if you ran into any completely ridiculous, crazy cases, any curveball situations, just anything that made you think like, oh my gosh, This is the craziest thing that's ever happened in my life. I'm so happy I signed up for this role.
Yes, Ben, I've got many stories, as any judge who'd served a couple years might. Again, just for our listeners and to be as ethical as I possibly can be, I retired after 6 years, despite my age, because I moved out of the town of Chilea, a town I love and still love. But we moved, and in order to be a judge, you have to reside in the town, and that makes good sense. You're also judges, whether acting or retired, are barred from speaking about the specifics of any cases that went before them. There are some liberal rules that might be a little bit more liberalized if the cases are completed and is a part of the public record. But nevertheless, in the interest of privacy, I really don't want to get into any specifics. But Ben, wow, you know, any judge who's done this would say, wow, there's some stories I can recall. A particular individual who frankly faked a heart attack in court, you know, and we know medically it was a faked heart attack. But of course, in that moment, we're all quite sincere wondering about the health of this individual. I've had many folks with significant mental illness episodes in court, in live court, and often that's with an awful lot of our public present in the court as well. Courts are public places, you know, so how do you manage that situation? I had many cases that really struck a chord with me were young folks, you know, I'm talking sometimes as young as 14, but really more like 16, 17, 18, who didn't yet have a criminal record, but you could see, who are you with? Like, why are these the folks you're associating with? And I see these are minor charges, but you could see what's coming next. And so we try to take good care with those folks as the court they've probably seen first. So I would work as the judge with the prosecutor, with the public defender, try to come up with creative solutions for people, but in particular, the young folks, to try to put them on a good path. So lots of stories, very interesting work, very rewarding work, but sincerely does take an awful lot of time, and at the risk of segueing too much to something else, you have to look at that first and foremost as community service, not as something for a resume, and not as something for any other reason than that. It's hard work. Meaningful work, influential work. And so you ought to go at this with the right frame of mind.
Yeah, it is. We could segue in so many directions because, Ken, you're the story of the man who, I don't know how you find the time for all this community service. Where did you get your start with community service? What was it, something that you were just raised that way? Or tell us about why you're so passionate about it.
Yeah, you know, Ben, that's a great question. And I wasn't raised that way. I love my parents very much. We're very close still, thankfully, and my siblings. But no, community service wasn't really something instilled. You know, being a good person, you know, good moral upbringing, and being active, certainly. And you know, idle hands is something that's sort of cursed in my house. So that was my upbringing. I think, honestly, some of it might have been law school. And also moving here, and again being new and not having an established, you know, social personal network, and my desire to get involved, also politics. I studied history and political science as an undergrad, and so sort of this concept that there's a bigger there's a bigger place in the world. It's not just about you. You know, there's movements afoot. There's things happening out there, and get involved. I don't know. That's how it started. You know, I'd say this. It was around 2010 or so, after I'd run for New York State Assembly. Again, there's a little sort of explain some of the reasons why I did that. Wanted to get involved. Certainly wanted to add to complement my then very nascent private practice. But when that was done, I said, I want to do something that's more obviously altruistic, frankly, if I could be so bold. So yeah. I sort of tried to diversify. This was also before kids, when you have more time in life, you know, generally. So I sort of tempered some of my political activities and instead got involved in a board, a particular large local nonprofit. It serves several thousand folks in the neighborhood of $25-27 million of annual revenue. It's a large organization, you know, individuals with traumatic brain injuries, developmental disabilities, and trying to help them live the life of their own choosing. That kind of role, you know, and it's evolved. Now I'm completing my 10th year of service.
Wow.
With the agency called DPI. There are other people, Ben, that do far greater work, but nevertheless, I wanted to do more of that and less so of politics at the time.
Tell us the agency again. I was talking over you.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's called EPI. EPI. It's evolved through the years. It's been around for a long time, but recently went through a rebranding, empowering people's independence is what it stands for. But a large local nonprofit. And just this morning, I had I chair the compliance committee of this organization. As you maybe can imagine, when you're dealing with folks with unique and special needs and challenges, but of course, the mission is to give them as much as possible so they can again choose the life of their own living, life of their own choosing. There are any number of unique issues we deal with on a daily basis. And so compliance, given my legal background, I think sort of lends well to that work. I've got a lot of stories and of trying to support and guide folks who are really just trying to do good work. I think I've rambled out a bit there, but I wanted to give back. I wanted to be a part of the community. Wanted to make good, you know, I guess on this way, then make good use of my time.
Sure.
My poor wife has heard me say this so many times. We have limited time, we have limited scope, you know, you got to do what you can when you can. You know, I don't know necessarily where that came from. They call it like a nervous energy, but I'm trying to constantly move. She's the same way. Just move, you know, just keep moving.
Two peas in a pod. I love it. Right. You seem like you must be efficient with time because you're, what's the number? Six teams, five teams? What was the number of teams you coach?
I believe at this point it's been five baseball and a t-ball team, and I try to help out with my daughter's softball team on occasion, and then but my I guess more particular interest is swim teams too. I was a swim coach. This is a long time. I don't want to keep talking about all the things I did 20 years ago, but I was a swim coach for a long time, and so I try to give back to help support my kids in their swim team. They swim for the Pittsburgh swim team now, having recently moved there, and. It's a lot of effort, you know, to run a team like that. And so I'm constantly trying to thank the boards and the coaches and the people who put together. You know, I got hundreds of swimmers and lots of events and lots of meets. They need support. They need help. You need timers, you know. You know, you need people to go to meets and be willing to give time. So, you know, I try to do a lot of that work too, Ben. It is tough. And I find that I fall asleep at about 9 o'clock every night.
That's okay. Good sign. Yeah. You know?
That's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. Go to sleep when the night falls, wake up bright and early.
Right. Right. Exercise. Then that's something that's fallen by the wayside here. I gotta get back at that. So no, I've got a lot to learn and a lot to do, to continue growing. But I've got three little kids, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And it comes with an incredible amount of joy and an incredible amount of work. and certainly some challenges, but balancing it all is really tough. But I work at it every day.
You know what needs to be done, Ken, is you need to sit down with someone for like a 4 or 5 hour segment and walk through chronologically the life of Ken. because I just think it would be a fascinating story. And, you know, we're both short on time. I'll jump all around. We're having like five topics at once, right?
That's
I'm just
okay.
Imagining taking 5 hours and walking through all of this. Biography time, man. This is fascinating stuff. And this doesn't have to be spicy at all. I know very little about politics. I know
sure.
the basics. I'm not uninformed, but I know the basics. And I do know, obviously, that so this is coming out in 3 weeks. However, at the time of recording, yesterday was local elections. So
right.
3 weeks later, but at time of recording was just yesterday, local elections. Tell me a little bit about just your connection with politics. Well, when did you run? Why did you run? Any just general thoughts on, well, we'll get into that. Let's get started with, you know, when you ran and why you ran.
Sure. I'd like to start with sort of a, it's going to sound maybe too philosophical.
I was going to go philosophical next. So
I want to go philosophical first, and then we can talk about more specifics.
Yeah.
I say broad first. Here's something I firmly believe in.
Yes.
It sounds just so obvious, and oh, come on, this has got to be canned. It's not canned. Thank goodness we've got just about, I think, the best system in the world, but it ultimately depends upon, this is why I really particularly like local elections, it really depends upon regular people in small towns being willing to put their hat in the ring. And it's not easy work. It's hard work. Politics is difficult. I mean, we all know that. Look at the front page of newspaper any given day. Somebody's being castigated for some position they took.
Right.
Right. And frankly, it also doesn't pay well. Let's be honest. So if it doesn't pay well and you get castigated left or right, and if I'm going to make a political point here, there's all sorts of what I call one issue people. If you're really focused on one issue, I'm not even going to mention them. There's lots of one issues, and you're so vocal on one issue to the exclusion of all other issues, then I frankly think you've lost perspective. Right. So if you don't have good people running for the right reason in an environment that's pretty difficult, filled with one issue people, and it doesn't pay well, well, we have failures in our society, right, and in our culture, and in our leadership in our communities. So that's my way of saying I am always grateful for people who try, regardless of party. I also think it's very good for our society to have different parties running in every election. I really do not like the idea of one party rule, either party at any level. I like balances. I like moderation. I like, you know, dialogue. I like negotiation. I think, frankly, if I'm being political too much, certainly federally, also state for sure. Not so much to our local level, thankfully. We've gotten away from that. We got away from balance. So anyways, that's my political philosophy in a nutshell. And that is one major reason why I got involved. I wanted to give it a shot. When I got involved, I think it's important if people want to get involved in politics, don't put your hat in the ring to run for something. Help other people first. Number one, it's the right thing to do. But number two, you'll learn a lot. It is not easy. Again, so learn, you know, help other people. Find some issues, not one issue, but many, hopefully, and people you believe in your community, and support them first. Get a sense of it and then go for it. So the assembly race, why my specific race? That was the first one I did, 2010. That encompassed parts of four towns, including Chi-Lai and about a good quarter of the city of Rochester. That really was an opportunity at a moment in time. There wasn't a candidate ready and standing up and willing to do that in a race that typically went against the party that I was aligned with. So I agreed to do it. I wanted to learn. I learned a lot of negative, but overwhelmingly positive things, and had a wonderful experience. So that was really just all in all politics, my involvement in it, but also a moment of opportunity. And that's the way politics works, obviously. You know, you have to have opportunities, you know. I don't know if that answered. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I love that you mentioned how it's not easy. It doesn't pay well. You're putting yourself up to social media, local turmoil.
Yes.
So you really need to make sure you're coming from a strong place of heart, in a strong place of service, where you want to help the community. You want to play a positive role. And there's so many people that are like, they're turned off because they don't like the intro there, that you're not going to get paid well. It's going to be tough. But if anybody's willing to put their foot in the ring, even if it's at a low level, even if it's just through a community service at a very small scale, where do you recommend people get started? They don't have to just immediately run for office, right? Is there things they can do?
Great question. So to bring it down to its basic form, parties, for politics first, but then we could also do non-political party stuff. So for politics first, there almost every town, city, village will have a political committee. They're not necessarily obvious, particularly in smaller towns where they're maybe not so active. But there's a committee that rolls up, if you will, structure-wise, up to the county party. So, you know, Monroe County has a Monroe County Republican Party, has a Monroe County Conservative Party, Monroe County Democratic Party, and so on. And so there's structure there. You just got to search, you know, and find who or what people are sort of chairing or running that local committee. That would be the first place to go. Necessarily go to the county level first, find out who the local people are. And obviously your town elected officials is a great start. Walk in the door and say, tell me how you got involved. And I'd like to see if I can help or learn more about it. Yeah, so I'd always suggest there with politics, it should start local. But there's more than that. You know, there's your chambers of commerce. There's so much. That's a great place to start. Also local, your library boards. School boards, that's very political as well. But again, similarly, right? Similar as your town politics. But there's so many good nonprofit organizations that are ready, willing, and able to welcome you in to help. You know, for instance, my organization, we have what we call an associate board for younger people. You know, I shouldn't say younger people. People with maybe less board or life experience who have expressed interest. You know, so
that's the perfect kind of person, entry level, interest, so much growth potential.
Right. So there are, for lack of a better way to call it, associate boards, if you will, and some of the larger local boards. And so that would be a great place to start. Reach out to an issue. Search your soul. What's an issue you care about? You know, there's many issues. And go find that local nonprofit organization who altruistically is serving in that interest and see if they've got a role for you. Maybe it's just a volunteer, you know. The point is, it always starts with the individual. It starts with their own initiative, and it starts with coming from the right place. You know, you got to come at it with the right place. That's particularly true in politics because it's usually much more obvious with your non-political volunteer organizations, right?
I think this is great advice, and I think everyone should, even if it's as small as just donating 8 hours of your time to one of these organizations. It goes a long way.
Right.
I'm a little similar to you, and you mentioned before that I wasn't raised as a community activist. My family showed so much love and care, but we weren't big. We weren't big community servants. And last month, my company raised over $2,000 for Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. And then through an event that Dave Mamano, came back to comedy, but basically he's an entrepreneur coach, a podcaster. He came back to comedy after 20 years. I partnered with Community Impactors. We raised over $2,000 for Make-A-Wish.
Oh, wow.
And in raising $4,000 in 1 month, I realized that I've been slacking and I have no one to blame but myself. And you don't have to go out and run a big networking event and raise all this money, but donating just 4 to 8 hours of your time one time and getting your foot in the ring and seeing the people and meeting just even the networking opportunities. Tell me a little bit about that. How is the networking and the meeting people, how has that affected your life?
Oh, Ben, well said. So first of all, you don't need me to tell you great work, but that's exactly the point I'm illustrating, right? You, at the end of the day, the end of our days, with the limited time we have, I don't know where this burning, insatiable desire came from, but I want to know that I did something, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of this comes from. Sounds like what you were just saying about yourself. But in so doing, let's be honest, it also, of course, has positive ramifications on your private business and your personal life. It's all related.
Yes,
it is. This is all related. You know, it's who you are as a person and what you're doing on a daily basis. Of course, it's interconnected. So, you know, I'll give an illustration. The town judge work, I ended up It was a significant learning curve to do the job well, but I now know an awful lot about criminal law, which again, doesn't really have anything to do with my private practice. But just yesterday morning, I had a longtime client call me up with an issue about the child and a petit larceny, you know, that they were facing. And so I was able to speak articulately on that subject to that client. And that happens almost once a week. Orders of protection come up, you know, dog bite cases. I've had two family members go through dog bite issues in the last year. So I guess I'd call that networking. You learn a lot in this field that doesn't necessarily do with this other, but they overlap. And of course, it also leads to business contacts, right? So your network expands. You meet new people in different contexts constantly. You know, with my coaching, with my board service, with my politics, I know a lot of folks through all of these avenues who end up learning who I am and meeting me and knowing what I actually do, you know, what pays the bills, so to speak. And of course, it's connected. So there's definitely absolutely that purpose. Anybody says otherwise, if they're in private business, is not being honest. So that's a part of this. Of course it is.
I'm in agreement. I'm thinking back. I'm still midway through, but I'm reading a book right now, Ken. It's called Range. I think the tagline's How Generalists Thrive. How Generalists Thrive in a Specialized World. And it gives countless 50-plus examples of people that were, in a sense, generalists. They did a lot of things. They maybe had ADHD and didn't focus on one specialty when they were younger, and they always wanted to have their hand in multiple baskets and try different things and have different skills. And it tells the story of how these generalists become more whole people. They become more community members. They become better at more things, where a specialist can go in and do one thing way better than any of these generalists can. But since they have this generalized skill set, they can create more impact by ultimately all these. And that's, I'm not calling you a generalist because you do also have a specialized skill set. But by trying all these different things and participating in the community, that probably makes you more whole as a person, right? It makes you a stronger man across the board.
Right. Actually, I'm very interested in that book that you're talking about. Send me an email later if you would.
I will.
Obviously, I agree. I think maybe an interesting way to reinforce that point you just said is that one issue concept I said earlier. It's something brandished in my mind that I learned in that race 11 years ago. You can't be a one issue person. I suppose you can be, but I just don't, you know, you shouldn't be narrow. You should be open-minded, right? That's really what we're saying, open-minded and involved, and it leads to a much more whole. And again, I don't want to preach to, this certainly comes off as preaching. I don't mean it that way. This is really my own personal choices for my life, but yes. I want to feel fulfilled. I want to feel broad. I want to have fun, by the way. I haven't mentioned about my social life. Holy cow. I mean, this, I don't know how I fit it all in, but I want to do it all, you know. I want to, and it helps lead to a lot more sense of personal fulfillment, you know.
Ken, thank you for diving deep with me. We've got one more thing to fit in.
Sure.
It's the rapid fire round. Okay. Quick, easy, short answer questions. It's kind of like Family Feud that we do rapid fire. You got to give the best answer possible. However, it's like Whose Line Is It Anyway? The points don't matter. They're completely subjective to whatever
this.
You want to say. So you can answer the question, fill in the blank. You can pass whatever you want to do. But let's get started with coffee or tea.
Coffee. Absolutely. Beer. No sugar.
No sugar. Beer or wine?
Beer. Good beer.
Cats are, what favorite kind of beer?
Ooh, Iron Tug is a favorite. Roarbox is a favorite. I'll just stick with those two right now.
Can we get real micro? And do you have a favorite style of beer?
I do. So historically, I'm a beer snob avowed. I admit it. Brown ales are my favorite style over the long haul. But of course, I'm caught in this New England soft, pillowy IPA thing. You know, I do not like the traditional IPAs. I won't drink them, but this is a new stuff. Other half really does that particularly well, for instance.
The Northeast is known for some great New England IPAs, obviously. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Neither now, but was always a night person. Always a night person, but that's had to change, you know, with kids and how, you know, just tired I am at the end of the day, but night person.
Give us two or three, whether it's a book, a podcast, a video series, just some educational training or mentorship that has had a positive effect on your life that you'd recommend to anybody, really?
How do I answer that? So I'm just thinking of books or podcasts that have had some influence on me that I've, or at least that I've enjoyed. I just finished, took me a while, but it was a podcast through the Washington Post on the history of the American presidents. One episode, about 45 minutes for every president. And it was fascinating. It was, I think, distinctly not political. It was about each of the presidents. And really the central theme was leadership. What made that president aspire to that spot? What made them good at that job? What also made them bad candidates for the job? I love that. I think it's called president. It is. It's called Presidential. Love that podcast. Something that had some influence on me, I think, I hope it shows through the right way, is Mark Twain. He's my favorite author. I've read a number of his books. I've read a lot of his biographies. I think he's fascinating. I think he's interesting, certainly intelligent, had a lot of failures, an awful lot of successes, but at his heart, he's a comedian, right? So kind of talk about a person who lived a full life. That's a really good example of that. So I don't know if that's helpful, but, you know, folks have never read Mark Twain or know anything about him, I'd suggest that start. And maybe if you've got some time and like a little bit of history, listen to that Presidential podcast.
No, I'd take the recommendation. I was supposed to read Mark Twain in high school, but I think I just cliff notes the whole thing because I don't remember any of it. So,
yeah, when you understand the person, you know, so this is going to be an odd way to do this. But this is the way I think, you know, again, my trainings as a historian, history is my background. My first love, if you will, academically was history. I would want to know about Mark Twain, the person first. You could read Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, Putnam Wilson, all those books, you know, later. But tell me about his story is fascinating. And then you get so engrossed in the story, you're like, I need to read the books, you know, and then you find out through his books how utterly hilarious he is. You know, so anyways, study the person first and then read some of their works afterwards.
Well, so I'm not as well versed in history. So tell me if this theory makes any sense. A lot of times we look at history and we're like, history repeats themselves. This is what this person did. Now this person's doing something similar. That means this person is just like this person. And I feel like you need to study the person because two people could be in a similar situation, 100 years separated, but they are different humans. Right. And everyone around them have different psychologies. So if you study the person, you can get a way better gist of what decisions they'll make. And it's not a correlation that two people are similar. They're very different people. And I just think it's fascinating to get to know the person themselves.
Well said. You know, so the old adage, the person makes the time or the time makes the person. It's obviously a combination of them each, but I'd start with who's the person, particularly in politics. You know, politics is really in the grand sweep of history. It ebbs and flows, goes back and forth, you know, and all sorts of facets of history for sure. And so we always think it's the worst now or it's the best now. And, you know, we've never seen this. That's not true. It's all happened before, you know.
Just about everything has happened. And what can we do other than make it better today for a better tomorrow? I think that was a theme today. You know, get involved with the community, guys. Ken's a great example of someone who does just that. And Ken, where do people get in touch with you? Should we check out the company website? Should we add you on LinkedIn or Facebook? Or what's the best way to stay in touch with Ken?
Sure. Thanks. Not Facebook, though my firm's on Facebook. I'm not. I try not to fill up that basket of time in my life with social media too much. So I'd say call first. 585-241-5994 is my direct line. Email kkraus@evansfox.com. That's EVANSFOX. com, but certainly we're on the web. You know, my law firm is, and there's a bit more history about me, and I think we even got some videos up there.
Yeah, it's a cool website.
Thank you for
I design websites, and mine aren't that good. That was a huge project, I can imagine.
We just unveiled that maybe 3-4 months ago, actually, so the timing was good. Thank you for that compliment, Ben. Yeah, so you can find us on the web and learn more there, and happy to chat about anything, really.
Love it, Ken. You guys are taking new clients, I presume, or?
Yeah, yes. This is well, I'd say it's a busy time of year, but it seems they all are. But I guess at the risk of getting into too much substance, there's a lot of pending or potential significant tax changes forthcoming soon. So particularly difficult time of year to plan. Right after elections as well will certainly change that cycle. But yes, of course, we're taking new clients. And if they, even if it's not an estate planning or long-term care planning or a state administration concern, if it's something else, I view my job as to first and foremost be good at communication and to be efficient. So if it's nothing I can handle and it's nothing that I feel that somebody in my firm is more than qualified to handle, then I'll find somebody else who can.
Ken, thanks again for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
No problem, Ben. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.